Chapter 24. The Manipulator. Is there anything I need to know before you bring me into the pit of snakes? I ask as Zaid drives up to the valet parking. Valet parking at their own damn house. This shit should be illegal.
And here, my name is Zach Forthright. I'm a self-made millionaire and have my own company for web design. We live in Parsons Manor together and are a happy couple, but I sneak around on you and go to gentlemen's clubs without your knowledge.
My eyes snap to his. He's been going to gentlemen's clubs? As in, the clubs that offer up women on a silver platter for men to get their rocks off to? Rich people gentlemen's clubs at that. Ones occupied by corrupt sadists. Who knows what happens in those places to those poor women? Sensing my thoughts, he smirks.
Before you judge, I have not and will not ever indulge in what they offer there, and eventually I'll get all those girls out. But they don't know that. Don't be jealous, little mouse. No one will ever be capable of getting my cock hard except you.
The heroism wars with his imprudent assumption. Part of me wants to melt, while the other stiffens into granite at being accused of such a thing. I roll my eyes. I'm not jealous, I snipe. And it sounds like you just have erectile dysfunction to me. He bites back a grin, a knowing look gleaming in his eyes. His voice deepens as he drawls lazily.
Keep it up and you'll be choking on those words when my cock is filling up your throat again. Everyone passing by will see me fucking your filthy little mouth, and there won't be a single person in that house that won't be aware of it by the me I'm done.
I scoff, turning my head away from him, only to hide the blush that I feel, creeping up my cheeks, and the sharp thrill chasing the nerves down my spine. I still feel the phantom bite of metal from his belt buckle around my neck, and I know with absolute certainty that Zaid would follow through on his threat if I pushed. Dickhead. He continues as if he didn't just serve me the most delicious threat I've ever heard.
Don't speak of your personal life. Nothing that means anything to you anyways. You're here to get information on Gigi, and that's incentive enough.
Incentive, I interrupt, whipping my head back towards him.
You're walking into the Viper's pit because Mark found something that you care about and is holding it over your head.
Zaid explains plainly. I snap my mouth shut, contrite and a little worried.
If he finds out anything else you care about, that will be something he'll use to his advantage if he's given the chance.
My mouth falls back open.
But don't worry.
He says, cutting in before I can demand that he take me home.
I'll flay his skin from his body before he can even think to do anything to hurt you.
With that, he opens the door, gets out and throws his keys at the waiting valet, shutting the door firmly and cutting off any questions I had on the tip of my tongue. For starters, can I go home now? I'm asking myself if solving Gigi's murder is worth involving myself with dangerous people. But it's too late. I'm here and I'm bound and determined to get at least a few more of my questions answered before Zaid takes me home. I have the feeling that not only am I putting my safety in Zaid's hands tonight, but my life. Because I'm walking into a house owned by an evil man, I don't need Zaid to spell that out for me. Zaid opens my door and holds out a hand for me to grab onto as I slide out of the car. Electricity explodes from where his hand grips mine, and all I really want to do is guide his hands to other parts of my body. I suck in icy air, the cold offering a balm to my insides and allowing me enough clarity to concentrate on everything else besides the domineering man beside me. Mark's house is ostentatious, a massive white monstrosity with 5 huge pillars and a million windows. In my opinion, the house is ugly, typical, and downright boring. The inside is even worse. I walk into a large, wide hallway with picture frames lining either side of the wall of who I assume is Mark's family. My heels click against the ivory tile, and I can't help but think it's going to turn brown after all the shoes that'll be treading across it. We're ushered by a butler down the hallway, past an all-white kitchen, and into a ballroom. An actual fucking ballroom. The kind you see in movies set back in the 1800s when finding your future husband or wife depended on going to a ball. 3 massive chandeliers dangle from the gold ceiling, arches of intricately carved wood between each fixture. The floor is a sparkling ivory, the little flecks glinting off of the chandeliers nearly blinding me. It's like looking into the damn sun.
Fix your face, Zaid murmurs from beside me. It's not until he speaks that I realize my face was screwed up into a look of disgust. Not because the place is ugly, but because it's so damn pretentious. and flashy. I don't need to see the rest of the house to know that the place screams, "Look at me, I have a gazillion dollars," and have no intention of sharing the wealth with the millions of starving families around the world. But what do I know? I've always wondered if the people who have the money to feed the entire world population are allowed to. All governments are corrupted. Maybe if you try to save the world and actively steal money from the richest pockets, you'll wake up dead one day. I smooth out my face, donning a blank mask as I look around at the hundreds of people occupying the ballroom. Everyone is dressed to the nines, the guests ranging from young adults to people who look like they're on their deathbed. Zaid holds out his elbow to me, and every signal in my brain tells me to snub the request. But that's pride speaking, and I'm not in a good position to let pride get the best of me. I loathe to admit it, but I'm safer attached to Zaid. Stiffly, I grab onto his elbow and lean into his side. Feels like hands smoothing into wet clay. No matter the divots in our bodies, we mold together perfectly. For the next hour, we mingle around the ballroom, talking to random people, many of them familiar faces I've seen on the news, arguing over bills and laws that usually do nothing but flatten Americans further under their thumbs. Zaid is charming, his demeanor calm and slightly reserved, but still manages to draw people in until they're hanging on every word he says. Most of their eyes linger on his scars, questions on the tip of their tongues that never see the light. You'd think it's because it's a rude question to ask, but really, it's because Zaid carries intimidation around with him like a woman with a designer purse. Despite that, he's a sight to behold as he works the room, gaining these people's trust and interest in a matter of minutes. I've no idea who's involved in Zaid's mission and who's not, but he looks at each and every one of these people as if he knows exactly who they are and their Enra life story. Maybe that's how he sucks them in so profoundly, he makes them feel like they've known each other for years. I, on the other hand, am not a natural. The social anxiety licks at my nerves, keeping my heart rate well above a normal pace. I smile at the strangers and laugh at everything they say, doing what I do best and manipulate people's emotions with my words. I pretend they're all avid readers, and the words I'm speaking are printing on blank sheets of paper for their greedy eyes to consume. Somehow, it works to the point of discomfort as all of their eyes are ensnared on me as I answer their questions about my career. I heed Zaid's advice and keep it all vague and surface level, but find pretty words to make my life seem more interesting than it is. Even Zaid appears to struggle with looking away, and the noon gives me a small bit of confidence. But on the inside, it feels like my stomach is a black hole, crumpling my insides like a wadded up piece of paper. On several occasions throughout the hour, Zaid wraps his arm around my waist and squeezes, his grip firm and reassuring. Those small touches are anchors, leveling my head and reminding me that I'm not alone. Mark seems to appear out of thin air, joining the two couples gathered around Zaid, listening to him speak about some interaction he had with another senator. I guess the story is supposed to be funny as the couples are both airing out laughs, but I can barely digest a single word he says.
Zach, Adeline, I'm so glad to see you two made it.
Mark announces, boisterously, interrupting Zaid's story. He doesn't seem the least bit bothered. I have a feeling the tale was fabricated entirely anyway. Seems I'm not the only one good at bullshitting. Mark, I croon joyfully, as if this man's face brings me any type of delight. He eats it up as he shakes hands with Zaid and offers me a warm hug. Or what's supposed to be warm? It feels like hugging a cold-blooded reptile. Next to Mark must be his wife, an older woman with beautiful red hair, the color of ripe cherries, matching red lipstick, and a black dress that seems to hang on her frail body. She widens her lips into a beautiful smile as Mark introduces her to Zaid. And I. What irks me is he doesn't tell us her name. He just says my wife. As if she's merely a possession and not her own person with her own fucking identity outside of her marriage to this wretched man.
Pleasure to make your acquaintance, Adeline. I'm Claire.
She says, gripping my hand in a light handshake. She offers the introduction to Zaid as well. And the devil takes it a step further and kisses her hand, trapping her gaze into his own. It wasn't sensual by any means. Something about it seemed comforting, like he was making her a promise that even she didn't know she needed. Claire's smile wobbles, and she gently pulls her hand from Zaid's grip. No one except my shadow, and I seem to notice her hand curling into a tight fist to abate the shaking. She's nervous, scared, and whatever that moment was with Zaid, it shook her. It doesn't take a genius to figure out this woman is abused. My eyes Subtly search her body, but the high neck, long sleeves, and full-length dress hide her body. It's a beautiful dress, but one clearly designed to disguise the bruises that I'm sure are staining her skin beneath the silky fabric. The other couple meanders off, sensing that Mark is now expecting a private conversation.
I have a few more guests to greet, but please, I insist you meet me in my study in about an hour and join me for a drink. My butler, Marion, would be happy to show you the way when the time comes.
Zayd smiles, appearing relaxed. Maybe it's because I've become acquainted with the monster selected between his bones, but I can feel the intent beneath his fabricated ease.
Of course, be happy to.
Zayd responds smoothly.
Great.
Mark bursts, smiling wide.
And Adeline, I look forward to speaking with you about your great-grandmother.
He smiles one last me, casting me a lingering look before walking off. With Claire in tow, Zayd wasn't wrong. The man is definitely exploiting the one weakness I have, solving Gigi's murder. And something tells me he's going to hang information over my head until he gets whatever he wants. Problem is, I don't know what he wants from me. But whatever it is, I have a feeling deep in my bones that it's capable of ending my life.